Welcome, friends, to this edition of the Dirt Walker Outdoors podcast. Originally, I interviewed Krista, or Pockets as is her trail name, for the Trail Talk segment of this podcast. However, Pockets is one of those special people that most definitely qualifies as an adventure seeker. In just a moment, you will hear her story of the challenges, trials, and excitement Pockets experienced through hiking on the Continental Divide Trail, completely through the states of New Mexico and Colorado. At the time of the interview, she has just stepped into Wyoming. The Continental Divide National Scenic Trail is a 3,028-mile trail, in theory, beginning at Crazy Cook Monument, New Mexico, at the U.S.-Mexico border. The trail extends through the semi-arid and arid regions of New Mexico, through desolate landscapes and mesas, crosses into Colorado and over and through the magnificent and difficult San Juan Mountains, and continues through Colorado, Wyoming, and Montana, ending just inside the Canadian border. It is a difficult trek, to say the least, and Pockets accepted that challenge. This is her story. Hello, listeners of this Trail Talk segment of the Dirt Walker Outdoors podcast. I am here with Krista Isaacson, trail name Pockets. How are you today, Pockets?
I am great. It is a wonderful day.
And you are on a zero day today in Steamboat Springs.
I am. I just got all my chores done for my zero day, so now I get to relax a little bit.
I appreciate you taking some of that time to sit and talk with me for a minute.
Of course.
I think your last zero day was quite a while back, wasn't it?
I actually took a zero day not too long ago. I had a incident where the trail wasn't really marked, and so I had to use my maps a lot, and I killed all my batteries, and I was solo. So I ended up having to get off trail, and it put me a couple days behind the people I was supposed to meet up with. So I ended up skipping a few miles that I will be going back to fill in. But so I did just get a zero not too long ago. So I am a little spoiled right now.
I do think I remember that now on your Facebook page. Hiking the CDT, from what I understand, can be a labor sometimes in maintaining a course just because of a lot of logistic challenges you meet along the way that tend to cause you to stray a little bit from the trail from time to time. So that's to be expected.
Very much, yeah. We were on a whole another route, and then we have a fire closure, and we had mapped out a whole route to take for the fire closure. And then 1 mile away from a junction, we had decided to take a whole nother route. And so, like, it's constantly changing out here, and you're constantly finding different roads or different trails to connect everything with all the closures that are going on.
Right. I don't think a lot of people understand that hiking the CDT is not like hiking the Appalachian Trail, where everything is thoroughly marked almost every step of the way and you have a defined trail to follow the entire time. A lot of it can be just you have to stay within that 50-mile corridor of the actual Continental Divide itself, but sometimes you're not on any marked trail at all.
Yeah, no, 100%. It's, if anything, this is my first through hike, so I can't compare it to any other trails, but a lot of the people who are out here have all hiked longer trails, and all they talk about is how terribly marked the CDT is and how there is no route, and how if I were to hike another trail after this, it will be much simpler because of the other trails just being better when it comes to just, you know, one route the whole way, per se.
Right. You started the CDT when?
I started on April 20th.
Why did you pick the Continental Divide Trail as a first-time through hiker?
It relates back to some struggles I was going through. About About 5 years ago, I am bipolar, or I have bipolar. And about 5 years ago, I went through a manic episode that made me kind of want to disappear. I was really following through with that, and I had set my eyes on Yellowstone National Park as a place that I wanted to go. And about a year and a half after that, I had stopped drinking alcohol, you know, got sober. And a year and a half after that, I had planned on going to Yellowstone with a friend. And I had worked really hard training for, you know, my Yellowstone hike. And 10 days before my trip, my friend canceled, just ignored my messages and just went off the face of the planet. And so I ended up having to come up with a plan. And I ended up coming up with doing a 100-mile stretch on the Colorado Trail. And that was essentially my first ever backpacking trip. I just flew out there by myself and planned on doing it by myself. And I did do my 100 miles in 10 days. But out there, I ran into a few CDT hikers, and just seeing the strength that they had. And there was just something about them that it, you know, light bulb in my head went off. And I went home from that Colorado trip, and I immediately started planning for the CDT. And so I realized, I actually was kind of contemplating the PCT, but then I realized that the CDT went through Yellowstone. So my big goal really is, you know, Yellowstone essentially. But I mean, it is Canada, but I just, you know, it feels right to kind of be at a place where I was so not in a right headspace 5 years ago, and I've worked incredibly hard to, you know, be better mentally and become self-aware. And so I thought that the CDT would be the perfect challenge to see if I really have done all the mental work that I thought I had done. And so between the mental work and Yellowstone, it seemed like the CDT was the best fit.
I see now. I was going to ask why you chose the CDT, but I'm pretty sure you just explained that rather than the other, the AT or PCT. So I understand that. And so you have made it completely through New Mexico and Colorado. So obviously, so far, this is working pretty well for you.
Oh, yes. It's working so much. I absolutely love it out here. I've never necessarily felt like I fit in at home, or, you know, fit in social circles or whatnot. And I really feel like the trail just feels comfortable. It feels like home. The people out here feel like my people. So it's just, it's honestly just an amazing experience out here.
That's fabulous. Starting in April 20th, you started in New Mexico, of course, northbound. Tell us what you thought of hiking through the desert there, southern New Mexico.
Southern New Mexico was very hard. There was not a lot of water, so we were doing really long water carries. I think my longest water carry was 25 miles. And, you know, that 20 miles were pretty common. And because I am a first-time through hiker, I didn't necessarily have all my gear dialed in. And so I started off really heavy on my gear. And so starting off with really heavy in gear and then adding 4 to 6 liters of water on top of it really makes for kind of some hard hiking. And then I also had a decent amount of injuries in New Mexico. There was at one point I had like 12 blisters. I had, you know, my body wasn't used to it. So I had like knee pain. I got Giardia in New Mexico because you're sharing water with cows and drinking out of cow troughs and basically living in cow poop through all of New Mexico. Those, and like towards the end of New Mexico, I got some shin splints. So New Mexico was just a challenge in so many ways. It was, you know, seeing if you could mentally overcome the physical pain and the physical challenges.
Did you work out the blister problem?
I did. It took me about 700 miles. It took me almost all of New Mexico, but I finally worked it out. So
that's good, because that's a long way to go with blisters like that.
Oh, such a long way.
Is there any part of New Mexico that you enjoy? I mean, I know you enjoy being on the trail at times, I'm sure, but I mean, specifically enjoy.
I really enjoyed, a lot of people say that they enjoyed the Gila in New Mexico. I didn't necessarily think that was the best part. There was a section before Cuba that was just jaw-dropping beautiful. There was just mesas everywhere, and it was just the colors and just feeling so isolated out there, but it was so beautiful. So that was definitely like my favorite part scenic-wise, for sure. New Mexico, I really kind of enjoyed some of the smaller towns too. It was much cheaper than Colorado, that's for sure.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to know that part. What's this going to cost me? What's this going to cost me?
Oh, yeah.
So you get the cheapest part in the beginning.
Yes. It makes you want to take more 0 days, I think, because it's cheap and, you know, you get sucked into the vortex of towns. So.
Right. Well, that's good to know. And so eventually you come to the crossing between the border of New Mexico and Colorado. Was that a big day?
Oh, that was a huge day. I was on cloud nine. Like, I can't even explain how I was feeling. I never felt like I achieved something as much as I did as walking across a whole state. It was unbelievable.
A big state.
Yes, it was the longest state of the whole CDT.
You really do accomplish something when you get that far. And what do you see on the trail when you're at that line and you're looking forward, Colorado's ahead of you? What does your mind and your eyes see ahead of you?
My eyes just saw rain clouds at that point. It was actually a very underwhelming moment, in a sense of all that's there when you get to the border is a pole with a New Mexico license plate in a Colorado license plate. And I don't know what I was expecting, but it just felt like a little underwhelming in that moment. But I remember thinking that I made it this far, I could do it again. And that, you know, it was just, you take each state by state. But I remember knowing that I had it in me to finish once I hit New Mexico.
So you step into Colorado. What challenges did you hit then?
Oh, Colorado right away threw some hurdles at us. I had a hiking partner at the time, and we had hit the South San Juan Mountains. And we had actually taken a few days off prior to hitting the South San Juan Mountains to let the snow melt a little bit more, because majority of hikers were all stuck in like Chama, New Mexico, or, you know, they were kind of dispersed everywhere, but everybody was stuck. Nobody could really go forward. So we're all waiting for the snow to melt. And then we hit the South San Juan Mountains, and it was by far the most beautiful, just seeing all the snow on the mountains everywhere. But this is where like our climbing started. We finally got to start climbing mountains, and then you add snow into that too. So it was a very big challenge.
So did you pick up your ice axe and things like that there? I'm sure you hadn't carried them through New Mexico.
Yeah, no. So we got to the border, and we actually went back down to Chama, New Mexico, because everybody has their snow gear sent there. And then you go back up to Colorado and you go forward. So in Chama, New Mexico, I got my micro spikes. I got my ice axe, you know, a little warmer clothes. Yeah, and then right immediately from there is when you go back to the border, you hit the South San Juan Mountains immediately into Colorado.
You're a first time through hiker. Not a lot of experience backpacking, I guess, except for the Colorado Trail, which is 100 miles that you said. Do you have much snow and mountains experience at this point?
I have snow experience in a sense. I'm a really big ice fisher. So cold isn't foreign to me by any means. And then I've done, in preparation for this hike, I actually went and did like a 5-day hike out or up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and kind of learned some tricks to snow. So that prepared me a little bit, but it was a it was almost completely different in a sense, because you're adding mountains to it, and you know, we're not boiling water or boiling snow to make water out there or anything like that. So I had some experience, but definitely not anything mountaineering, but there was definitely a lot of mountaineering in that section.
Did you have to use your ice axe? I'm sure you probably used your micro spikes.
I used my micro spikes a decent amount. I had pulled out my ice axe a few times because there were definitely times when you're walking on a slope and one wrong step and you're just going to fall down the mountain. I definitely had my ice axe, but there was also a point in the day when you would hit, you know, it would, the snow would start to melt and you would be post-holing. And for example, I did a 1,000-foot glissade down a mountain, and I opted to use my trekking poles instead of my ice axe, whereas the two other people I was by used their ice axe. To me, it didn't seem as if the ice axe would actually be able to like grip in the snow because it was so slushy and mush.
Explain to people who don't understand what a glissade is, please.
So a glissade is where you just slide down the mountain on your bum.
That's a good way to put it.
Yep. It's really fun. I mean, I honestly, after the 1,000-foot glissade down, I wanted to climb the mountain just to do it again. It was a blast. It was just, you know, it was like being a kid again and going sledding on a huge hill. So
yeah, anybody hearing that, not understanding what a glissade is, needs to catch YouTube videos so they get an idea.
Yes. It's worth it.
You're in the San Juans. How long did it take you to get through there?
I believe it was 5 days. It's kind of hard to remember, to be honest. So much has happened, but I believe it was 5 days, and there was constant obstacle after obstacle after obstacle. We had come upon one section of the trail where 2 or 3 days prior to us being at that exact section, two different people had been helicoptered out for injuries. And then two other people got helicoptered out for being cliffed out because they couldn't go anywhere. In that scenario, we ended up having to bushwhack down the side of a mountain, which was incredibly hard. And after already doing a 13-hour day that day, it was just exhausting. And of course, when we get to the bottom too, it was like 8 p.m. at night, and we had to cross through this really fast-moving river. And we're already soaking wet, you know, from your legs down from all the wet snow. And it was just freezing cold that by the time I got to the other side, I couldn't catch my breath for almost an hour after that because my body was just so cold and just trying to get warm again. So that was a pretty big obstacle. And like, we actually had to bushwhack down the mountain to where we were 3 miles off of trail. So then we had to add, you know, 3 more miles to our day that day. And so then the next morning we made up those miles. And then we did about, maybe it was like 12 miles in between that. And we ended up at this, it was almost like a knife's edge type kind of section. And it was me, my hiking partner, Grizz, and Farrell. And we had all looked at this section for probably an hour, maybe even longer, trying to figure out our best way to traverse this. Because the sketchy part wasn't actually that long, but it was deadly if anything bad happened. You had to either go up by the cliff and try to make it around, which is, you know, dangerous in itself because the closer you get to the rocks with the sun beating down, you could fall in between the rocks and the snow. And then if you decided to try to take a different way, it was literally a vertical drop down. And so we had watched Farrell go across and he had made it. And so we attempted it and we got halfway through and realized that we had made a mistake. And Farrell had actually made this mistake too. We had made the mistake to where we went vertically up instead of going down like we should have. And so we ended up retreating back because the videos don't do it justice. There's YouTube videos on it. It doesn't do it justice. It was just you one step away from death. I mean, I don't know how else to explain it. You just look down and you couldn't even see down because it was so steep. And so we, Grizz and I, ended up bailing on that and going down, bushwhacking down the side of a mountain again with no route. You know, you have to figure out your own route down the mountain. And so then we ended up taking an alternate route, connecting with an alternate route, and, you know, getting out of that, getting out of the South San Juans that way. So even in the moment and in the day, you have a certain plan and you just have to be okay with changing plans and trying to come up with a different route.
Wow. So, that was quite a story. I'm sure that was harrowing.
Yes.
You're going to remember that forever though.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I don't think I'll ever forget the thoughts that were going through my mind in that moment, because you know that you're one step away from death. And when you're just that close, you think about a lot. And, you know, I'd contemplated if I really wanted to do the trail and if I should be out there, because it seemed way beyond my skill level. And I had talked to other through hikers and, you know, people who've done long trails, and everybody was having those same exact thoughts. And soon after that section, two of the people I had been, my hiking partner had quit. And then somebody else I had been hiking with for hundreds of miles, he also quit because, you know, they had the same thoughts of, what am I doing out here? You know, is this really worth it? And after a few days of contemplation, you know, they decided that they were at peace with going home.
So. And you were not.
I was not. Nope.
You got to get to Yellowstone, first of all.
Yes. Yep. That's the goal. Yellowstone. Exactly.
Really cool that you have that, not only Canada that you're looking forward to, but that goal of making it to Yellowstone that just keeps you going. So tell us about what comes after that in Colorado.
After you go through the South San Juans, you then have just the San Juan Mountains. That's where my partner had quit. We were just about to hit the high route. And so we literally 3 miles away from the trailhead, from the alternate, he had told me he wanted out. So I ended up having to take a lower route on that section, which is unfortunate, but I have more reason now to come back to Colorado to do that section, because I heard that the San Juans were beautiful. You meet up with the Colorado Trail there for the first time, and you go about 13,000 feet. And then once you're done with the San Juan Mountains, you go kind of, I don't know what the mountain ranges are called. It's before like Monarch Pass. And it was an incredibly beautiful section. It unfortunately rained every single day during this section and thunderstormed for us. So it was quite, it was very mentally draining. And then after that section, we hit the Collegiate West. And again, that's still paired with the Colorado Trail. So actually, while the CDT was with the Colorado Trail, it was really awesome because the Colorado Trail is so well maintained that there was no blowdowns anywhere. You know, there was water everywhere because it's Colorado, but, and the trail was marked. You necessarily didn't have to look at gut hooks every, you know, 10 minutes or every half an hour just to make sure you were on trail, because you could just follow along with the CT, which was so incredibly nice. And the collegiates were by far my favorite section of the trail so far. I can't wait to go back and hike them again. And it even rained on us while we were there, but it was just so jaw-dropping beautiful. It was incredibly hard. It was the hardest hiking I've ever done. You're above 12,000 feet for over like 80 miles, I think it is. And you're climbing 4,000, 5,000 feet of elevation. So the days up in like New Mexico, my longest mileage day was 31 miles. And once we hit Colorado, your mileage starts to decrease, which it almost feels like demoralizing in a way, because you don't, why can't I hit such big mountains? So we pretty much were doing like through the collegiates, it was pretty much like 18 miles. And then after the collegiates, you still stay connected with the Colorado Trail for a while. And then it just splits off. And then the CDT becomes again full of blowdowns, unmarked trails, no trails whatsoever. So it almost feels like New Mexico over again. There's just tons of alternates also through Colorado. You could take a higher route if you wanted. You could take a lower route if you wanted. If you were behind in days, you could take an alternate that might shave off a few miles just so you could catch up further if you're, you know, like for me, I'm falling a little bit behind my end date that I wanted to. So it's all about strategy now, like trying to figure out which alternate would be the best, but which alternate will also help you get to Canada in time.
Sure. And it's also not like the AT or even some parts of the PCT where its resupply is just constantly readily available. You often have to strategize when you can get to the next spot to be able to resupply your food.
Very much so. I mean, from what I understand, this is definitely the more complicated trail when it comes to resupplying too, and long stretches. So you go anywhere from like 80 to 120 miles between resupplies. And when you do get to resupply, hardly any of the towns are actually on trail. So you have to get to a place where you can hitch into a town to resupply and then hitch back out.
What do you think about the hitching part?
Honestly, I love it. I live in a state where hitchhiking is illegal, and makes me kind of sad because I've had nothing but amazing experiences with hitchhiking. I've met incredibly nice people. There's been times where I haven't even held up my thumb or had my cardboard sign ready when people have offered me a ride to get to where I need to go. So it's, if anything, I feel like it's almost like restored my faith in humanity a little bit.
That's good to hear. But a lot of those people that you're coming across are probably expecting hikers in that part of the world, wouldn't you say?
Yes and no. You would be surprised at how many people by the Continental Divide Trail don't actually know that the Continental Divide Trail exists. That actually seems very common because you're hitching into those towns, so they're not on trail.
Yeah, they're not on trail. And it's more expensive in Colorado than New Mexico.
Oh, Colorado has been, I'm really happy to get out of this state. It has been so expensive. That's, you don't have many like hostel options. And even when you do have a hostel, it's going to be at least like generally around $50 for bed in a bunk room. Whereas in New Mexico, you could get a hotel or a motel room for $50. That's been, the lodging has been very expensive. The thing that has been the most expensive though in Colorado is the food. When hikers get into town, the first thing we do is go eat. We don't eat small portions, we eat big portions. And unfortunately, like I got a quesadilla in Grand Lake and it cost me $20, for example. So
wow.
It's just, yes. Very
so
expensive.
Across the board, Colorado is just more expensive. So got to be prepared for that part.
Yeah. Yes.
You have set foot in Wyoming.
I have. Yesterday, I crossed the border.
Wow. So two large states behind you.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And how far into Wyoming have you gone?
I just stepped into Wyoming. Somebody in my tramily, their wife came out to visit and they picked us up at the border and brought us back into Steamboat Springs. So tomorrow morning, I get to go back out to the border. And I think I had said it earlier, there's a fire closure. So we actually aren't even on the CDT right now. We are in the middle of doing an 80-mile highway walk. So we have done over 60 miles on the highway on a pavement road, which is so hard on your joints. And, you know, it just makes you feel pain so much more, I guess, after you're walking on pavement. So yeah, we've had to highway walk into Wyoming.
Oh, that sounds fun. A lot of the complaints from through hikers on the CDT are a lot of road highway walking. Not exactly what you sign up for, but it has to be done.
New Mexico was, I would say 3/4 of it felt like it was all road walks. And then there wasn't many road walks in Colorado at all. but I hear that Wyoming is just as bad as New Mexico when it comes to road walks. So it's going to be a lot of road walking through the next 500 or so miles.
I've seen a lot of fire going on in Wyoming and Montana. A lot of the southbound hikers are having to deal with that. I guess you're looking ahead and watching what fires you're going to have to deal with beyond the one that's basically right in front of you.
Yes. So I don't try to plan too much because, as I've learned out here, your plans change every single day. You can plan something, doesn't mean it's going to happen, but it's still nice to get an idea of what you can do or what routes you can take. So we've all been strategizing, you know, looking ahead at the Sobos posts and the alternates that they're taking or the road walks they're taking or the trails they're connecting and trying to come up with our own routes towards when we get up there. And even through Wyoming towards Yellowstone, people start making their own routes so that they can enjoy Yellowstone a little bit more, which is what I plan on doing. But then that's going to cut off some of the fire closures that the Sobos are now experiencing.
Okay. What is your next challenge or your next beautiful scenic moment that you're expecting to be right ahead of you?
So my next challenge is I have about 30 more highway miles to go. And then after that, I will hit a section that has no trees or no shade for 170 miles.
And oh, that sounds fabulous.
Oh, yeah. It's not necessarily looking forward to it, but I feel like New Mexico kind of prepped me for this. So on our road walk, we had just done 2 days ago, I think it was, because when you're road walking, you don't have gut hooks that tells you where water or anything is. I only had 1 liter of water for 22 miles. And so that made me feel a little bit maybe more confident that it will be okay in this next section because it's also supposed to be very dry. And I've heard that you should be carrying between like 4 and 6 liters of water during certain times.
Yeah. And that makes for a lot of weight.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 1 liter of water, I think, weighs a little bit more than 2.2 pounds.
Yeah. You're carrying 6 liters of water. You're up around 14 pounds just from doing that.
Along with out here, the food carries are generally around 100 miles, too. So long food carries and long water carries. Again.
With no shade, no trees.
With no shade, yep.
In the end of July and early August.
Yep.
And on a very hot year.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, on a hotter than normal year for that area anyway. Yeah, that is definitely a challenge.
Yeah, and the mountains have kind of disappeared too. So it's going to be a little bit more maybe of like Colorado. It was just awesome because you could look around and always just have beautiful sights and I felt like that was a little motivating, whereas now it's going to be back to just trying to crush miles as fast as you can, because it's going to be a little boring. Just sometimes the trail gets a little boring.
But you have some good people with you again?
I do. Yeah. I'm hiking with 3 other gentlemen. They're a little older than me, Just Jim, Cougar Bait, and Farrell. It will be nice to have some company throughout I especially wanted company just because, you know, grizzly country is coming up. So I started hiking solo when my partner left and I was really enjoying it. And I was loving the like inner strength that was coming out of that and what I was learning about myself. But it's just nice to be hiking with others for just the security, the comfort levels.
So when do you have to pick up a bear can?
We will pick up bear spray right before the winds. They say that, I don't think there's many grizzlies in the winds. I get confused with what's up ahead. So there's just so much going on. But I think I still have about 200 miles about without grizzlies. And then we'll come into grizzly territory.
Yeah, that's something to look forward to. But I think some people worry about that a lot more than they should. And then you have the few that worry about it not enough.
Yeah, I washed my sleeping bag back in Grand Lake because I'm starting to worry about it a little more. But Colorado, I can count on both hands how many days it hasn't rained or thunderstormed. It's just been so much rain. So I had to eat in my tent and in my sleeping bag a lot. So I thought it was my best, you know, the safest move was to wash my sleeping bag, and I'll probably do a little quick wash of my tent before I hit the grizzlies. But you also hear all these reports right now with the drought up north that the grizzly bears are kind of acting abnormal for how they normally act. So I think that that's something we're all kind of trying to pay attention to.
Oh, I'm sure. I've seen a few of those posts and things like that myself, but especially because it's an unusual year for heat and drought in Montana and those areas. Who knows what you're going to encounter by the time you get there?
Oh, most definitely.
And we know you're going to get there.
Oh, I'm getting there.
So how far to Yellowstone now?
I believe it's about 300-ish miles, maybe even a little bit more. It's towards when I get closer towards Montana. So Yellowstone is at the northern side of Wyoming.
That'll be a big day in your life right there, crossing that line.
I imagine I'm actually going to cry. Like I feel like I've been working towards this for what, 4 or 5 years now. So it's just, it's going to be a very symbolic moment in my life. It's just going to mean a lot. So I'm really excited to get there.
Awesome. Premature really to ask this question, but you're going to finish the CDT. We're not even going to act like you are.
No, I am.
What are you thinking after that?
I'm thinking that after that will be the PCT in 2023.
I wondered if you had another long trail in mind. PCT, yep. 2023.
Yep. So I just, you know, I do say if I complete this trail, then my next trail will be. But, you know, I'm going to complete this trail. So
I think so. You've made it this far. You still have a good attitude about it. Might as well just keep going, right?
Exactly.
Exactly. Well, I tell you what, is there anything you would like to add to this before we end?
I actually have met some thru hikers out here who didn't really know what they were getting into. And so I encourage, if you are going to hike the Continental Divide Trail, to research the trail and know what lies ahead, because road walking, the desert, no water, long food carries, all that is, it's much harder than I think people think. And if you've done the other long trails, you might not expect that the CDT would be much different, because I've just heard from so many people who have done the long trails how hard the CDT is compared to those. And then I would also say that I have found out here gut hooks to be very unreliable, and that's not something I was expecting, and I don't think anyone was expecting. So if you are going to hike the CDT in the future, I would look at other apps and other maps just so you have backup plans, because there's some people who have just relied solely on gut hooks. And I saw 3 people in the boot heel where gut hooks wouldn't even load on their phone once they got to the terminus. And so the CDT isn't well marked, and there's the CDT gut hook shows you where there's water, and especially in the sections where there's not water, you need something to help you find it. And so I think that you gotta look at other maps. Gaia's been really good out here, Caltopo and all those. So I just encourage people to kind of look around for that, because I've just noticed that gut hooks has been incredibly unreliable, at least for myself. And I do know that I have an Android phone and other people have iPhone, and gut hooks seems to do better on iPhones than it does Android phones.
Yeah, that's good information there, especially for someone like me with an Android phone. I have that problem a lot of places where iPhones seem to do better than my Android.
Yeah. Yeah, it's frustrating.
It can be. That's your little bit of advice, is for people to do their homework before you set foot on this trail, which can be done. And then maybe check out some better apps, or even possibly lean back towards paper map and a compass.
Yes. Yeah. No, for sure. Anytime you're by a hiker box, you're going to see paper maps in there. So I don't think that they have been too reliable for people out here, but I would just definitely get used to using other apps and other maps for navigation and not just relying on gut hooks, where I think on the other long trails, you can rely on gut hooks and it's reliable. So
the CDT is relatively new. Most people I even mention it to don't even know what I'm talking about. Good to know that maybe it'll get better within the next 2 years, but we'll have to see about that.
I think it will. I think this year alone, there's been more hikers than in any year past. So it's definitely gaining in popularity for sure.
Cool. And I am going to be asking you again, when you complete the trail or somewhere near the terminus there in Canada, to come back on the show.
Oh, I would love that.
That would be great. Yeah. So you can tell us how Wyoming and Montana went, because we all want to know, or I want to know. I'm sure someone else will want to know as well.
Well, right now, my expected end date is October 10th, and I am going to try to get that down to like September 30th. So hopefully I can do that.
That's still a few months away, but hopefully you can do it.
We just hit the halfway mark. So
right. Speed on the trail from here and hope you enjoy it.
We got to beat the snow.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it does start. Last year, we had 5 snowfalls, some serious snowfalls, serious ice storms like never before that we were not prepared for, and very unusual here. So we don't really think of, you got to beat the snow. But yeah, it's a big thing when you're headed north.
Yep. It's generally it generally starts snowing about the last week in September in Glacier. And they can just shut down Glacier whenever they want. So it's not like a certain date. So you just got to try to beat the snow there. Otherwise, you'll be highway walking or road walking in the snow into Canada. So.
Well, yeah, because Glacier National Park is not something you want to miss either. Or I would. It's high on my list.
Yeah, it's supposed to be wonderfully beautiful out there. So.
Well, I thank you so much for talking with me today on this Trail Talk segment. I will ask you to come back at some point there at the end of September. Till then, I hope everything goes well.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes, ma'am. It's been great. We will talk to you again.
Yeah. You have a wonderful day.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Pockets, friends, on her adventure of through hiking the CDT, or Continental Divide Trail. Fantastic interview that I hope you enjoyed. I hope to return Pockets again to the podcast at a later date, but you can follow her progress and updates on Facebook at Krista's CDT 2021 Adventure. I hope you'll stay tuned for more from the Dirt Walker Outdoors podcast, and subscribe on Spotify or Google. Soon you will also find these episodes accompanied by select pictures on the Dirt Walker Outdoors and Survival YouTube channel. Thanks again for listening. Dirt Walker, off trail.